Hello, everyone. You're listening to Family Talk, the radio broadcasting ministry of the James Dobson Family Institute. I'm Dr. James Dobson, and thank you for joining us for this program.
Welcome to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk with your host, psychologist and author, Dr. James Dobson. I'm Roger Marsh, and as a way of getting started, here's a taste of what our guest these past 3 days, Dr. Arch Hart, has been sharing.
My perception of Satan is a perception of an intelligent enemy who, if he cannot take your foot off the accelerator, will put it down very hard for you.
Wise words indeed from Dr. Archibald Hart about how easily the enemy of our souls can use our own busyness to get us off the right path. It also makes me think of the quotation from the author and Holocaust survivor Corrie Ten Boom. She said, "Beware of the barrenness of a busy life." That fits perfectly with the theme of this 3-day broadcast series that we're concluding today with our guest, Dr. Arch Hart, on managing stress and adrenaline. And even though this classic broadcast was recorded some time ago, you know, this is still a hot topic today. I mean, just look at how many books and magazines have been dedicated to helping people who are desperate for advice on how to simplify and organize their hectic lives. But, you know, I believe this conversation with Dr. Hart offers something unique to the conversation even today. Not only does he bring a practical, physical understanding of stress and how it affects your body and your emotions, but he marries that knowledge with the all-important spiritual aspects of the issue. His research shows that if you can learn how to manage your responsibilities in life, you will not only experience better spiritual, physical, and emotional health, it just might save your family as well. Now, we've already covered 2 days' worth of advice from Dr. Hart, so if you missed anything from those two broadcasts, you can download the programs at drjamesdobson.org. And let me quickly reintroduce our guest before we get into part three of our discussion. Dr. Hart is the author of the book, The Hidden Link Between Adrenaline and Stress. He has also written 25 other highly acclaimed books as well. He is the Dean Emeritus and Professor Emeritus of Psychology at Fuller Theological Seminary. And now, without further ado, let's listen to the conclusion of this very relevant conversation about stress and its link to adrenaline right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Let's say a woman has been done wrong by her husband. I mean, really wrong. He ran off with other women. She was the last to know. Finally, he dumped her. When they got into court, he tried to take everything away from her. He divorced her. He's left her broken. Now she's trying to raise these children. She has nothing. Every day of her life, when she doesn't get enough money to pay her bills, she thinks of him. And she deeply resents him, even as a Christian. How does she deal with
that? Yes, and she resents him. And part of that feeling of resentment, that emotion of resentment, involves a desire to hurt him back. And so she fantasizes, you see, and all day she imagines that he has an accident going to work, or that his latest girlfriend dumps him, or that some catastrophe will happen in his life. And while she's doing that, she's pumping adrenaline and destroying her own body. And the resentment she is feeling at that time is eating away at her. It was Hans Selye, the great researcher in stress, who said that of all the emotions, the emotion that is likely to do the most damage is resentment and a desire for revenge.
I studied that in 1956, the first time in college.
and I think that is absolutely true. And those emotions will damage the person carrying them. And this is where the gospel is so wonderful, in that it gets to the heart of the matter. And I believe that the antidote for resentment is forgiveness. And it's been modeled to us in Christ by God. It is the only opening at the end of the cul-de-sac. It's the only door out of this room of resentment.
I've quoted you many times. In fact, in my book, Love Must Be Tough, I quoted you right at this point, because you said, forgiveness is giving up my right to hurt you back for hurting me.
Yeah, surrendering it back.
Yeah.
And we surrender that right as an act of forgiveness. We have the right, and we stand there with the axe lifted and ready to bring it down on the head of the one who has hurt us. And we take that axe and we lay it aside. And we do it for one reason only, and that is that God has asked us to, that he has forgiven us. Now we must forgive the one who has hurt us. And that is the greatest antidote I know.
You know, there is so much validity in the scripture that relates to what medical science and other aspects of scientific understanding are now coming around to. There is wholeness in the gospel.
The gospel is an integrated whole, designed for the whole person, and in it is the most wonderful health that anyone can imagine.
Arch, we've talked about resentment as one of the sources of perpetual adrenaline flow. Of perpetual stress or distress. Mm-hmm. Name some of the other obvious ones that we really ought to be conscious of.
Well, closely related to resentment is, of course, anger. And there are people who are angry all the time. Their personality is angry. They get angry at injustices. They get angry at the president. Yeah. They get angry at foreigners. They are angry all the time, and that puts them in a constant state of emergency.
Name some others. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I'm thinking of potential business failure. A man who is on the edge of bankruptcy, we'll
right.
say.
The threat of failure hanging over your head.
Medical problems that you're worried about.
Threatened illness, threatened disease, worrying, anxiety.
Having an adolescent, maybe.
certain stages of even having grown up children. I mean, my children are all grown up now, but problems don't stop then. And then the grandchildren come, and later on a grandchild, goes off the rails a little bit, and on and on and on. Life is not going to be free of stress. We have to learn to live within it in a stress-free mode.
Now, I'm sure, Arch, that you have read and studied the book, Type A Personality?
Yes.
I get the implication from that book that the author feels this is in our genes, that we are what we were born with in terms of temperament, and that you may learn to cope better with your temperament, but you will have that temperament all of your life. Is that the impression?
I think that was the impression that book gave, but I don't believe that that's altogether true. No, I think that we model it. I think that it's our culture that teaches us how to be that way. I've had the privilege of having grown up in Africa, and there are just as many type A people there as there are here, but there they have not learnt the habits, the behaviors, the attitudes, the beliefs that underlie us. We are a performance-oriented culture, which makes the gospel very difficult for us.
That's right. If it was genetic, it would be the same in every culture.
It would be the same in every culture. But we are a performance-oriented culture, and competitiveness, achievement. We only prove something to ourselves if we achieve something. And that, I think, gives evidence that it is very much a learnt thing.
As far as the national implications, Arch, are we a stronger country for being a nation of achievers? You look at Mexico, their culture is much more laid back. Perhaps that's more healthy for the individual, but how about the national implications?
Right. Again, I'm not making a case for either extreme. I'm making a case for a balance. I think that an individual can achieve very much more if they manage their adrenaline in a sensible way, if they counterbalance the moments of high achievement with moments of relaxation and rest, if they know when to push the work aside and when they know when to go home and be with the family, when a father knows that now is the time I've got to spend with my son and not with the bank books. It's that balance, I think, that epitomizes everything that Christ wants in his followers.
You are a dean of a school of psychology at Fuller. You are a professor. You are an author. You are into a lot of different things. You have a private practice. Are you speaking theoretically, Arch?
No, I can bring my wife and my children here to testify to the fact that I have learned to balance these things. There are times when my schedule gets hectic, but the moment that happens, I pull back. I build in recovery time. I plan it into my schedule. If I have a series of speaking engagements that are going to be demanding, I make sure that I plan a period of time for recovery after that. If I have a late night speaking engagement, I make sure that I don't have a commitment at the crack of dawn the next day. That's responsible self-management. That is Christian assertiveness. And the other important remedy for the problem is improved sleep. I sleep extra time, both before I have a heavy commitment of speaking engagements, and I sleep extra time after I've had extra speaking engagements.
Well,
because,
people,
as I mentioned earlier, sleep is a very, very important restorative natural mechanism that God has given to us.
I find also athletics, exercise for me, is very stress-reducing in that it pays dividends all day long.
Now, exercise, you see, does a number of important things for us. It helps to burn off surplus adrenaline. That's one of its functions, provided you don't exercise too competitively. Uh-huh. There are some people,
they got to win.
Golf has got to be the worst game of all that I know. More anger and adrenaline flows in golfers than anything else. But if you exercise and control the competitive side of it, you can burn off a lot of surplus adrenaline. And then, of course, there's evidence that it helps to improve the brain tranquilizers. Just natural tranquilizers in the body are enhanced as we exercise. And that all improves our ability to tolerate stress.
They've actually demonstrated, Arch, that the brain releases endorphins, or the pleasure substance that the brain emits.
There's a whole group of hormones that are under that endorphin list. One of them is a tranquilizer. The other is a pain inhibitor. And the more we exercise, the lower is our pain experience. Our tolerance for pain goes up because these endorphins reduce our pain sensations.
Arch, talk about us creative people, those who write, those who perform, those who are musical or creative in other ways. We need adrenaline to get that job done, don't we?
Well, no. I think that's another misunderstanding. Ministers typically are probably, as a group, are the largest group of creative people who have to do something fresh and novel every week, that sermon or sermons that must be prepared and so on. And there is this misunderstanding that adrenaline, being psyched up, is when we do the creative things. That's wrong. In my opinion, creativity is best achieved during low levels of arousal. And I've worked with a number of ministers in therapy, and I've taught them the technique of using low adrenaline arousal to do the creative work.
Let me give you an example of the opposite, and you comment on it.
Right.
One of my favorite authors is Thomas Wolfe. Look Homeward, Angel, You Can't Go Home Again, other books. I think he only wrote four or five before he died at a fairly young age. They said that during the peak of creativity, that he would sit down at a typewriter and he wrote by what they call stream of consciousness. I mean, he just threw down everything that was going on. And he would work 14, 16, 18 hours at a time, sleep just a few hours and hit it again while this was on him. And when it passed, he was through. When it passed, he couldn't create at all. Now, there are people like that. My father was that way. When he painted a picture, my dad was an artist, he would work these long hours of intense work. And when it passed, he could not, even if he had made commitments to people, make himself create. Now, where's the contradiction?
I don't think that working long hours necessarily means high level of adrenaline arousal. I think that if we were to have monitored them carefully, I think we would have found that they were operating at very low levels of adrenaline arousal. High levels of arousal usually is needed for physical activity. Perhaps the pounding of the typewriter needs a high level of adrenaline. But the creative thinking behind that took place during low levels of adrenaline arousal. Most people creatively function better in the early hours of the morning, shortly after they wake up. Huh. The adrenaline is low. I do all my writing before I go to work. The moment I get to work, the moment I hit the problems, the moment I have, you know, the student interviews or the patients waiting to be seen, my adrenaline starts to come up. And I am not very creative at that point. I'm productive. So in the book, I make the distinction between creativity and productivity. Creative thinking is best done during low levels of arousal. But even creativity, the reaping process is second to the sowing process. And there are many people who don't allow adequate sowing to take place. Mm-hmm. And so in the book, I talk about how to sow your mind, how to sow the thoughts.
It's got to cook for me.
It's got to cook, yeah. And often, if I'm going to write the next morning, the previous day, I will go over some notes. I will review material. I look at some other books. Then I let it germinate. I'll sleep on it. And then the next morning I wake up and my mind is ready to go. The thoughts are there. And I can let them flow easily and quickly at that point.
I'm concerned about our time, and I don't want it to get away from us without talking about children and stress and how we can reduce the stress level for children.
There is a lot of evidence to show that stress disease begins very early in life. And that the child at the age of even 6 or 7 is beginning to evidence the patterns of behavior that later on will be seen to be linked to the stress-prone person.
All right. Let me throw something at you. Right. It is my opinion that the parent who wants to open all the doors for the child and get that youngster into all kinds of lessons and experiences and exercises of various types is setting him up for some problems.
Absolutely. And the child who just wants to go to the room and be quiet or read a book is often frowned upon by the parent. The parent says, no, you've got to be active, you've got to be involved, and drags that child out and forces them onto into some activity that parent values. And that is bad. The child needs to learn relaxation. He needs time to be quiet, time to be alone even. And this is how parents can easily train their children and direct their children towards a very distressful life later.
I always surprise people by a position that I take on homework for children, because I wrote a book, or several of them, on discipline and the importance of parental authority and school authority and so on. And people expect me to believe that youngsters should have this regimented kind of life.
But programmed.
I don't believe in it. I tell you, when a youngster is sat in school for 6 hours, they need to get away from
it. Right.
And to have the whole evening jam-packed with these heavy responsibilities, especially in the younger years, I think that's a great mistake.
It takes that period of life for the child and turns it into a very unpleasant period. I mean, I think most look back on their school years with not very good memories. And the more driven you were, the more someone stood over you with a knuckle duster, the more unpleasant they were.
Having taught school, I remember the youngsters that I'll bet were under adrenaline pressure all day long because they set a standard for themselves that required that, too.
And I think as parents, it's not that we want to lower the standards. It's not that we don't want our children to achieve. But somehow we've got to teach them to balance the need to achieve with the need for relaxation. I think we should be teaching children from a very early age how to take time for relaxation, how to use relaxation, how to counterbalance exercise with relaxation.
Let me role play with you, Arch. I'm a mother, and I come to you and I say, boy, you won't believe that son of mine. I mean to tell you, he's in sixth grade. He has never made a B. He takes his classwork so seriously. When there's a test coming, he goes to work on it days in advance. I don't have to tell him. He does this on his own. And he just is so disciplined in everything. Do you worry about that? What do you say?
I do, yes. And if I were that father, I'd go to little Billy and say, Billy, I think we should go fishing for a while. Or I think we should go to the beach for a while. Or I think we should go for a drive into the countryside.
Daddy, I have a report due next week. I can't do that.
Then I think, Billy, you just put that down now. And let you and I go and spend some time together. I think it's the rare child who would forfeit an opportunity to go and spend time perhaps alone with Daddy, who would prefer to stick with the books than do that. And I think by doing that, by us taking the initiative as parents, we would relieve the child's guilt, because very often that child is being driven by a feeling that I'll only please mommy, I'll only please daddy if I achieve. And that's the biggest lie that that could possibly be perpetuated.
Now, the greater majority say, how do I get some adrenaline in this kid?
Right. Most of
how do
them.
We make him
but,
care?
But then, you see, I think as parents also, we need to value the low arousal. Now, it's true. Some children are lazy and need to be motivated. But motivation, again, is not the same as adrenaline arousal. And some children are not being stimulated enough. And it's not like we must live all, every day, without being energized. But again, back to that word of balance. There needs to be the child coming from a high adrenaline demand situation needs an opportunity to counterbalance that with some distraction, with some recreation, with some relaxation.
Arch, would you worry about a 15-year-old, we'll say, who is interested in everything but hasn't cultivated a whole lot of anything? He's a dabbler. He likes this, he likes that. He's interested in astronomy and science, and he's interested in athletics and this, that, and the other. But he has no identity in any of those areas, and he's just enjoying life and kind of moving from one thing to another. Mm-hmm. We're in a day where Jimmy Connors began dragging around a tennis racket when he was 3, and by the time he was 8, he already had this thing. Mm-hmm. You know, that's who he was, and he's turned it into, of course, a career, a life profession. What is our objective from your perspective as parents? Is it to expose our kids to many areas or to give them a big head start in life in one particular thing?
I believe you should not put all your eggs in one basket. I believe a child should be exposed to many things, the richness of life. A child should be exposed to music and to art and to sports of many sorts. The child who focuses on one thing and one thing only does not develop a well-rounded, a well-balanced personality. You put all your eggs in one basket. You develop only one game, only one sport. If it doesn't work out for you, you have nothing else to fall back on. And so the child who is well-balanced and well-read and a variety of music should be fostered. The child who is the jack of all trades and master of none is probably better equipped to live life than the person who is the master of one narrow skill and whose ego and self-esteem is based upon that one narrow foundation. That child is living a very, very risky life.
So the advice that you've given us in 3 programs now, that we should take a more laid-back approach and not get as uptight over accomplishments and responsibilities as is our want, also applies to children.
I believe so.
That and we shouldn't get too upset if they're making a few A's and B's and C's. They haven't done anything by the time they're 12, 14, or 15 that you can write all the relatives and brag about. That they're just ordinary kids coming through life, kind of enjoying it, laid back. You
balance.
Feel better about that.
Balance. You see,
maybe I love
that balance
word.
Is better than laid back. Balance. A child who can balance achieving with recreation, who can balance drivenness with being able to put the books down, put the pencils aside, and enjoy some recreation. That's the child, I believe, who will be better equipped to live a balanced adult life.
Well, we come to the end of the 3rd broadcast on this extremely important subject. It's been a pleasure having you with us, Arch, and I hope you'll come back.
Good to be with you, Jim.
There was so much helpful advice on this edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk with our guest, Dr. Arch Hart. In fact, there was so much good material in these 3 days' worth of broadcasts that I hope you were taking notes. Maybe there's someone in your life that you could share this message with as well. You know, I think we can all think of people who mean very well and they love the Lord, but they have packed their lives so full of things and activities, they're just running themselves and their families ragged. Perhaps they haven't seen this yet in themselves, but they could really benefit from a loving friend to help them learn about this topic. Well, here's my advice to you. Be that friend. Download or share this message with them today. You'll find it at drjamesdobson.org. Also on our website, we have posted a link to Dr. Hart's book, the title again, The Hidden Link Between Adrenaline and Stress. And we have so many other great resources online as well. We've got videos and articles answering some of the most common questions related to family life. And you can find all of that and more when you go to drjamesdobson.org. You know, when you support this ministry, both through your prayers and also through your financial contributions, you are helping us to create and update these great resources for the family. We couldn't do it without you. So if you're able, would you consider making a financial contribution to the ministry? 877-732-6825 is the number to call, or you can give a gift online through our secure website at drjamesdobson.org. Thanks so much for your financial partnership, and thanks for joining us today. I'm Roger Marsh, and we'll see you right back here next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.
Hey everyone, did you know that radio is more popular now than ever? A new feature here at Family Talk we're excited to announce. It's called the Station Finder feature. This is Dr. Tim Clinton for Family Talk. I want to tell you how you can listen to our daily broadcast on a station near you. Go to the broadcast menu at drjamesdobson.org, then click on the Family Talk Radio Stations button. Once you're there, you're going to see an interactive map of radio affiliates, which, by the way, is growing every day. Simply click on your home state, and then you'll see where our broadcast is airing in your town. Stop randomly spinning around the dial, hoping to find Dr. Dobson and Family Talk. Go to drjamesdobson.org. And take advantage of this brand new Station Finder feature.